Hello, folks. Welcome to another Epis Ride Along, a series of knickknack podcast episodes dedicated to recording my virtual travels and views in the world of simulation, with ties to the real world when applicable. And that's not just flight simulation anymore. Oh no, I'm expanding it to include many other things. And to that end, this will be Season 7, Episode 30, and I'm calling it The Secret to Good Simulation. So, with years and years of flight simulation under my belt, games like Civilization, and then games like The Sims, SimCity, I started with SimCity, I started to realize that there was a real trick to what made a good simulation game, and I thought I would share it for the benefit of anybody that studies game design or wants to put together a good game or is maybe working on a mod for current simulations that are out there, that sort of thing. And the secret really is designing a game world that mimics a real world system. So let's just take X-Plane as an example because it's an easy one. We already have that established base. X-Plane relies on simulating real-world physics, real-world aerodynamics, and real-world weather, and a bunch of other systems. And in simulating these systems, when you put it together, you get an aviation world. And you get to experience what it's like to fly primarily a fixed-wing airplane in as close and to a real-world environment as a consumer home computer user can get. And that's really cool. But it also has a side benefit, a side opportunity that most hardcore sim users will end up finding themselves exploring whether they think about it or not. And that is learning how it works, understanding the real world concepts. And maybe, you know, you aren't going to pick up X-Plane or SimCity or The Sims, and you know, you're not going to become an aerodynamics expert by playing an X-Plane. You're not going to become a psychologist by playing The Sims, and you're not going to become a city planner by playing SimCity. But what you might be able to do is you might be able to get some sort of concept of whatever the game designer is trying to simulate, and you might gain an extra interest, a desire to explore further. And that is particularly relevant to young players. When I was younger, the big buzzword in simulation, game design, game development, that sort of thing, in the mid-90s, was edutainment. Mario teaches typing, this sort of thing. To some extent, Oregon Trail and SimCity and that sort of stuff as well. But it was primarily sort of the Mario teaches typing, reading rabbit sort of thing. Which did not work. It did not work because the learning was the primary objective. In order for a game to be a game, or a software toy if you want to use Will Wright's word, it has to be fun, primarily, first and foremost. Civilization is a good example. Civilization, if you look at it, is a lot of history, a lot of events, timelines, dates, that sort of thing. And that can be very boring if you're reading it from a textbook. But if you suddenly find yourself in a simulation where you are Queen Elizabeth and you are ruling the British Empire and you are fighting against the Russian Empire and the Indian Empire and any other of the long list of empires that have dotted the world's history, will suddenly become very interested in how did the English/British Empire become as successful as it did? How did X, Y, and Z happen? And you try and make that happen, or maybe you make different decisions to make it go a different way. I think I'm quoting Sid when I say, game design, a good game, fun, is nothing more than providing the player with a series of interesting choices. And It may seem counterintuitive at first, but that really is what the fun of a simulator is about, whether that be a flight simulator or kind of a turn-based strategy game like Civilization, a text adventure like Oregon Trail, or a people simulator like The Sims. It's all kind of the same concept. And so we find this ourselves in this world where we want more people interested in science, technology, and math, kind of that STEM thing, whatever the acronym is. Well, if you want more people interested in science, technology, engineering, and math, what you gotta do is you gotta give people a space to have interesting things happen that require science, technology, engineering, and math. This could be, I've seen it, I haven't played it, but a game where you're simulating building your own computer and putting your own, choosing your own computer parts, and oh, I forgot to put the thermal paste on. Oh, that's bad, and now I learn why that's bad. Or it could be, any of the other examples I've provided. The thing you've got to do is you've got to give the player an interesting space to play in. My example, from my design days, I actually have a couple of them. Let's go with Planet X, actually, because that's the ultimate one. The idea was, after having played, I think the first simulation strategy game I played after Oregon Trail, where I was really serious into it and thinking about it and trying to understand the game, was SimCity 2000. Now, when I played that game, I didn't really actually understand it, other than, okay, zone residential, zone industrial, zone commercial, put in power, put in water, and that's the way you build the city, and you zone all this land. And the part I couldn't figure out at that time, because that is a really complicated game, was how to encourage the Sims to build. And for anybody that is playing any version of SimCity or any version of whatever the competitor product is called that I'm currently forgetting that I own, the secret to that system is what are called demand caps, cap reliefs. You have in the game a demand system, a demand, certain level of demand for residential. That's the least cap demand, so that's the demand that you're going to see right off the bat. And then when people have houses, they're going to want places to go to work. So that's where industrial gets a high demand. And then eventually, if you have enough parks and nice things, then commercial businesses start wanting to open up. So that's the secret to that game system. It's a demand cap relief system. So that's a good example of a system and learning about. That's not necessarily reflecting the real world. Like, in the real world, it certainly helps if you have nice things like parks and schools and trees and all those things. But in the real world, of course, that's hard to simulate what drives demand, but it's an interesting simulation nonetheless. It caused me to become interested in city building. I think I lost my train of thought somewhere along that way, but that's the sort of thing you have to do. You have to take an interesting simulation and make it, make people want to learn about why your simulated world works the way it works. Make a player that's experimenting with X-Plane want to learn why, when they suddenly point the nose up and they lose airspeed, the nose drops like a stone and they. If they're not coordinated, they start spinning. Like, make them want to learn why that happens. And that's the trick. So I think I remember my train of thought now. I was talking about Planet X. So my idea with Planet X, sort of similar to the idea of Spore, but hopefully if I had the budget and the resources and the team or whatever, it would be better than Spore. The idea was to kind of stage things through. So, you start building a city in an environment somewhat similar to SimCity, but with a historical context. And then when your city gets to a certain stage, you start expanding your city. You start building nearby cities. It becomes kind of a civilization type experience. And then when you get to the space age, then it becomes kind of a Masters of Orion, 4X space exploration game, and you run into other, you go explore space, you expand your life form to other planets, and you interact with other species, and you do diplomacy, and you have to still, even though you progress to different levels of the game, you still have to kind of keep tabs on how your cities are doing, how your planet is doing, your base planet, that sort of thing. So that was the idea behind Planet X. Planet X, huge grand scale concept, very hard to do design wise, but if I were able to make that game happen, I would hope that I would be able to probably mine Star Trek to the best of my ability to try and get all the fun and interesting facts and interesting philosophical debates and issues that Star Trek raises and bake that into the game to give the player a series of interesting choices. And that's really what it's all about. So, having had this discussion, let's take a fresh look at Microsoft Flight Simulator as in its current iteration. What is it lacking? What is it not doing that may dissuade some people from getting real into it? Like, they might pick it up, they might play it for 3, 4 hours. I think that's probably the average amount of time that most people play a game when they buy a game. So, what might make them play longer? What might make them be more engaged? What might make them really get into the experience and become a hardcore simmer or a hardcore gamer of whatever game it is you're trying to sell? And the answer to that question is not only expandability and moddability, but also giving the player more to do, more to see, more to explore, more to learn about. And there are some great mods out there that I'll put the links to in the show notes that do that sort of thing. Primarily little GA airline businesses. So, you're not only just doing GA flights, because that's mostly what Microsoft Flight Simulator is, it's good for GA flights, but you're also trying to run a business system at the same time. So, you learn as you're going through and doing that what challenges a small general aviation business might run into. And then, hopefully, when you expand and get up to the airliner levels, when airliners eventually, hopefully, of good quality, we'll see what PMDG is able to do with their 7-3. When you get to that stage, hopefully you are at the stage where you can expand and, pay the hundreds of millions of dollars you would need to buy a 737 or a 757 or whatever. And hopefully it's a natural, organic development. And that's really what you need. If I look at The Sims, if I look at Flight Simulator, I've noticed The Sims is kind of a very closed environment. There's some modding, and you can go pretty far with mods, base metal drugs, things like that. But for the most part, it's a pretty closed environment. The developers try and make it such that they have a monopoly on the expanded products. Only they can sell you expansion packs. And that's kind of a frustrating thing because usually the developer created expansion packs aren't all that great. And that's where historically Microsoft Flight Simulator and X-Plane and every other flight simulator out there has, since maybe the late 90s to mid 2000s, mid to early 2000s, has been real successful because they discovered, hey, we can release an initial base product, maybe release a few patches, and then spend 5 years working on the next release. And in the meantime, as long as we have invested some time in creating developer and moddability tools, then third-party developers are going to create more content for our game that's going to increase the sale of our game. And oh my gosh, a third party is going to sell our game for us. And that's where you make your money, on the back end. And that's something that either Microsoft doesn't understand, or that is just not the way they want to make their money. They want to make their money up through the marketplace, you know, transactional things. It's like, no. You release your product, and it's half finished, so that's problem number one. And problem number two, you release your product and the tools aren't great. People aren't going to adopt your product if it's not finished and it's not moddable, it's not expandable, and they can't kind of push the technology to the uppermost. I'm of the opinion that I realize, of course, that you know, releasing pay-to-play betas is par for the course because it's hard to get the financing you need to actually finish a game and release it when it's done. I understand that. That's just the modern reality of game development. But I don't know. It seems like there's such missed opportunity, and I feel like I've tried to explain these, what I feel are fairly easy to understand concepts. You know, I don't think of myself as being that smart a person, but it's apparently eludes Microsoft. So at any rate, I just thought I'd try and look at this from a different perspective, a broader perspective, a perspective of learning, a perspective of using the technology as best we can, trying to have fun with it, and also, you know, learning and not realizing we're learning. That's really where the fun comes in, is realizing suddenly you come out of years and years of playing a game with special interests that you didn't realize you had before. So, at any rate, I think I'm going to wrap things up. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting my work by donating at fsridealong.com or leaving a constructive review in your favorite podcast app. I am still trying to figure out the financial ends of things and thinking of splitting the podcast feed again. So again, please, if you have feedback on that, let me know. Easiest way to reach me is on Twitter, NICNACJAK, or comment on fsridealong.com. Support for fsridealong.com comes from listeners like yourself and Simply Magpie Virtual Airline and Flying Club based in Newcastle, England. Find them on the web at simplymagpie.co.uk. The music is Catch Me If You Can by Attica Attica. Find them at atticaattica.bandcamp.com. You can support the show, of course, at fsridealong.com with your generous contributions and donations. It would be greatly appreciated. The Knick Knack Podcast and FS Run Along series is copyright 2006 through 2021 by Knick Knack Marsh and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial 4.0 International License. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. Happy landings. Bye. So catch me if you can. I'm